What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Thanks, everybody.
The Bears.
You're listening to the best of the Bears.
He's in for the touchdown, and the Chicago Bears have taken the lead.
A weekly mix of 670 The Score's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
The Bears absolutely need to get into the mix. Are they in the mix, or are they being delusional about where things stand with their stadium? Paris Schutz is incredible. You may remember him from WTTW. He now works for Fox 32. He's been putting out all sorts of cool stuff on social media as well. He is live here in studio joining us on the Circuit Resort and Casino Hotline, kind of. He's here in the room. You've been doing all sorts of work on this particular story. Update the Score listener who's like, I feel like things are moving in the right direction. Are they?
Well, no. You know, to use the football analogy, it's 0 yards in a cloud of dust right now. I called the governor's office this week and I said, so have the Bears sat down with you and had a meeting in the last few months? And the spokesperson said no. So they came out with this announcement on Friday. We're solely focused on Arlington Heights. We're going to get this bill passed in Springfield to help us out with property taxes a little bit. And we can't do it until we get that. And then we're going to put shovels in the ground this year. But this is kind of what's been going on for 2 years here. A lot of proclamations in the media that, well, they're this close to getting these votes to get some help to build their stadium. And yet when I talk to lawmakers, they say, well, it's news to us because they haven't really lobbied us. They're not doing the things they need to do to make this palatable for us. You hear the governor, you hear legislative leaders going on TV saying, yeah, they're worth $8.5 billion. I don't want to give any taxpayer help to an organization that seems like it's doing just fine. So the notion that they're going to get something through in the fall session, and here's what your listeners need to know. They couldn't get that bill through in the regular session. Now the rules change in fall. You need a 3/5 majority. And so they're thinking, well, we didn't have the votes in the regular session. Somehow we're going to get like 16 more votes in the fall session and get this thing passed. It doesn't make any sense.
All right. So, Paris, you're clearing up some things here and a big picture is starting to come together. But just so people can kind of wrap their heads around it, on Friday they make this announcement and it's clear that Kevin Warren is staying doing his thing, which he says, we're making great progress. This is going to happen. This is what we need. Shovels in the ground before the end of the year. George is the one who says, we need to do a better job. He stayed on message with that, and he stayed on message with that even during the game.
He told the truth there. He told the truth.
He said, we need to do a better job of getting Springfield to go along. But now you say they haven't done anything. Like, you're, as a veteran in this realm, if an entity, a corporate entity, a team or otherwise comes out and says, we're trying to get this done with legislators, it usually means they've started down that path.
Well, they've shifted their strategy over 2 years. Let's go back to all the missteps from the very beginning. Kevin Warren has been on the job, what, 2 years, two plus years? And the McCaskies already have that plot in Arlington Heights. That's where they want to go. Kevin Warren comes in. And I believe him sincerely that he thought that the best move was to go to the city. So he befriended the mayor. He said, screw Arlington Heights. Let's try for something on the lakefront. Mistake number one, befriending Mayor Brandon Johnson, who's not politically popular, doesn't have any juice in Springfield. And they came out with that press conference saying, oh, by the way, also give us $2 billion in taxpayer money. Lawmakers came out right away saying, not going to happen. We don't have any appetite. Then what Kevin Warren was saying, I remember interviewing him at the Union League Club. He's like, well, they're worried about their elections right now. Of course, they're going to say that. But once the elections are done, they're going to come back and they're going to vote on this. No, that didn't happen. So they did change their strategy. They said, well, first of all, they started focusing solely on Arlington Heights when they realized Chicago wasn't going to happen. The strategy, instead of just give us $2 billion, is this bill where it says we want property tax certainty, which means instead of pay property taxes based on what the value of their building and the complex and the land is going to be, let's, before we build, strike a deal. Let's have the ability to strike a deal with Arlington Heights, the municipality, on what our property taxes are going to be. And I don't understand this bill either. So it's like, we go to Arlington Heights and we say, hey, by the way, we're going to pay $1 in property taxes. What are you going to do? You know, like, or else we'll just go somewhere else. So this does sound like, and State Rep Cam Buckner, who I know you've talked to, has said, yeah, it's a property tax break, and this could save them real money.
So you made the analogy. Tell people the analogy you made when we had talked about possibly coming on. You likened their political strategy to what?
Their political strategy is akin to former head coach Matt Eberflus's end of game strategy. It's just a bunch of people looking around on the sidelines, it sounds like. I'm just basing this on reporting, you know, and talking to people that by the way, are with the Bears organization and close to this. And there are people that have advised the Bears on how to do this. For instance, you know, don't come out and ask for $2 billion. The Cubs tried that, 10 years ago now, and they didn't get it. And so they found different things. They shut down Waveland and Sheffield. They got the sign. So they found different things to help them out. And the Bears needed to identify what that is. I will say there were opportunities, based on my own reporting, to get some taxpayer help. If they had come together with Jerry Reinsdorf, not on a building, but saying we're going to build our own buildings, but on a financial benefit package. Can you extend the hotel tax for both of us? And we're going to be together on this. And, you know, and lawmakers would have perked up because that's two big stadiums here, massive economic development projects. And that would have been an easier sell. But we know the Bears and the White Sox, you know, they did their own separate thing. Jerry Reins, it was like a race to the bottom in terms of, you know, Jerry went down there with his leather jacket saying, build my whole stadium for me, as he did 30 years ago when he had Mike Madigan and Big Jim Thompson back then. He doesn't have that now. So that was mistake number one. Number two, the governor, and I can say this because he didn't say off the record, but we did an interview before the DNC a year ago. When the cameras stopped rolling, we started talking about the Bears. And he says, look, like, the thing about this is, like, if you build in an area that needs economic development, the state will help out. We build roads. We build infrastructure. We want to see something that, like Bronzeville. And you know full well, the Michael Reese Hospital site was talked about. The Bears insisted that it would just not be feasible there.
You look at what the Bulls are doing with the 1901 project.
Right.
There's going to be money for that stuff.
And it's a community Garfield Park that needs development. This is a great thing. Public officials want that kind of thing. There's no community on the lakefront. You know, you're not developing or advantaging a community if you build on the lakefront. And that's what Kevin Warren did in the Twin Cities, is that it did help a neighborhood develop. So they didn't think in terms of that.
I wonder, Paris, and we're talking with Paris Schutz of Fox 32, is there a miscalculation here on maybe Kevin coming in and being an outsider and not understanding not just how Chicago politics works, which is its own animal, but Illinois politics? Like, the constituencies are very different. And if you're trying to pitch someone from Decatur or Peoria or Champaign, it's a different pitch than it is the alderman from the city of Chicago. Did they have this right?
No, that's a great point, Lawrence. You're absolutely right. And that's the thing that they realized, I think, as this progressed, is that you've got, and this is what Cam Buckner told me, we've got 30 state representatives from Chicago, and you're asking them to vote to give money for the Bears to leave Chicago? So, you know, when you are asking for state money, you've got people in Chicago, you've got people in the burbs and downstate. You've got to make it palatable to all of them. And now that's why their strategy has changed. So now, instead of money, they're saying, we want property tax certainty, not just for us, but for any big development like ours. So now they're trying to frame this in a sense of, this isn't just a giveaway to the Bears, it's to help all of Illinois. And that's exactly right. That's the game you have to play. It's a game of math. Addition, you've got to get Chicago people on board, suburban people on board, downstate people on board, and show that you've got your ducks in a row. And so when your strategy is, hey, Mayor Johnson, be my new best friend, and also state, give me $2 billion to build on the lakefront, you're not playing that game.
There's only a handful of privately owned stadiums in the NFL. Like, most of these teams find a way to get state money.
Yeah.
And obviously that has changed. Kansas City just tried and didn't get it.
Right.
And so I'm trying to figure out Kevin Warren's arrogance in this way, somewhat based on success in Minnesota, somewhat based on the NFL's success and gravitas. And then what? The McCaskies not understanding how things actually are working these days? Yeah. Where's all this coming from?
Look, at Kansas City is the best franchise in the NFL over the last decade with the best player in the NFL, and their voters said no to public funding out of stadium. So what makes you think that the voters here are going to be different? And I did have someone in the Bears organization tell me they wonder if Kevin Warren thinks that just by virtue of being the Bears and when the fall starts, they're going to see so much excitement on the field that lawmakers are going to say, oh, we got to help them because Caleb Williams is doing so great and everything's so great.
That's where I'm going.
That's like, where it sounds like what the strategy is.
Yeah.
And there are people in the Bears organization that wonder if that's what, and that's not a strategy, obviously.
But that's so McCaskey-esque, and it's so Bears-esque to think, as they have for decades, we've got them right where we want them.
Yeah.
Because we're the Bears and they love us. And if there's still some of that going on, that's not very constructive.
Well, then the governor said the other day, he doesn't think they have the leverage of saying, well, we're just going to leave Illinois then. You know, they're not going to leave the Chicago area, are they? I mean, they don't have that leverage that Jerry had to say, I'm going to go to Nashville or Tampa Bay.
Could they go to Northwest Indiana?
Maybe that would have been a good initial play, you know, like
the Ricketts had to do it. They threatened Rosemont.
And you could, you know, you could, yes, if you're thinking this out strategically, you could say, like, let's have Northwest Indiana in our back pocket to say, well, fine, you guys don't want the economic development in Illinois, we'll go to Northwest Indiana. Well, they can't do that now. I mean, no one would believe them.
And you spent $200 million on a parcel of land out in Arlington Heights.
Right.
So that's a problem, too. Paris, where can people see your latest stuff?
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I love you guys. And this is such a thrill to be here. I've listened to The Score my whole life. So Fox 32, Paris on Politics airs Monday, Wednesday, Thursday at 9:30 p.m. on Fox 32 or anywhere you get podcasts. So we're going to have Mark Gannis, who I know your listeners are familiar with. We're going to have him on tonight to kind of hash through all this. He's not happy, by the way. He's siding with the Bears and saying, like, his position is it's not that big of a giveaway to them, and it is the Bears, and at some point you got to stop squeezing them. But as we talked about here, it is on the Bears to have a political strategy that's going to be a winner.
Can we see you play piano somewhere soon?
You can, Matt, as long as I can see you covering Bruce Springsteen or...
whatever it's been.
Yeah.
But yeah, Davenport's, where else?
I've got a band, and we've got an album that we're mixing right now, and so we're going to have an album release in a couple months.
Come on now.
Thanks, man.
We would like to be invited to that.
Yes.
Yes, you will be invited.
Yeah, I'd like to sing three songs.
Open for Tributosaurus?
There you go.
Okay.
Baby T, Tyler Ferengul would like to sing two songs.
There you go.
He's only got two in his repertoire. It's fine. Paris, thanks for the time.
Oh, thank you, guys. This is a thrill.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
This could equate to Caleb, too. Bo had a great defense, right? And he acknowledged that he had a great defense. And he played like he had a great defense. He didn't take very many sacks. He protected the football. And not taking very many sacks is the opposite of what Caleb did this past year. But Bo kind of knew, like, I'm going to get the ball back. My defense is probably going to take care of business. But he didn't have a lot of great skill players around him. And I think what he did is he limited, you know, and Sean's great at this. And that's a big part of why you go and you pay a Ben Johnson, what do you pay him? And you pay a, you know, Sean Payton, what you pay him? And you go and you overpay, you know, at a coordinator spot to get Cliff Kingsbury is because of what they can do to help your quarterback.
The more we look back and reflect, the more painful it becomes. But there's also responsibility that Caleb has to get better. And that is going to be put to the test this season under Ben Johnson. This is Spiegel and Holmes Show, by the way. We appreciate you hanging out. We're here until Cubs pregame, which starts at 5:30 here on The Score. And the Cubs, Southwest. Radio network.
Man, you said airlines. We needed airlines in there.
Airlines.
Is that a record pause there, Lawrence?
Yeah, I don't know.
Airlines.
There was a lot of pregnancy going on in there. A lot of it. James Palmer.
Radio network.
James Palmer referenced the quarterback tears by Mike Sando in The Athletic, right? He referenced that yesterday, and I hadn't read the descriptions yet. I had seen where Caleb Williams was. He's quarterback 23 in Mike Sando's quarterback tiers.
That hurts a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, and this is based on, like The Athletic does in different sports from time to time, hardcore interviewing of a ton of industry sources, executives, coaches, you know, the GMs, all sorts of people around the NFL, and where they think these quarterbacks are strong or not. So I want to read you some of this. I want to read the listeners some of this stuff here, okay? Caleb Williams entered the 2024 draft as the number one quarterback, enters his second season facing questions about his ability to process and play quickly after taking 68 sacks, third most in NFL history. Quote from a general manager in the NFL, "I think that will come in time. Maybe it's a little bit like Josh Allen early in his career. We had so much good other stuff that you live with some negative plays, and he gets more snaps under his belt. That part will come." Okay, that's nice. Then there's some others. Here's a defensive coordinator. "He's got the talent to go up, but in terms of processing ability and getting the ball out of his hands, it was the worst we played against," says a defensive coordinator in the NFL. "He just holds the ball forever. I'm thinking the ball should go right there. Throw it. And he did not throw it. Voter after voter raised the same concerns. Here's an opposing head coach. "He's definitely a number one talent. I just think it's going to take him longer than Jaden Daniels. He's not playing fast right now. There's something there. His processing to me was alarming watching the tape."
Oh, boy.
Processing. Here's more from another coach. "You saw signs and ability, and also I think you saw signs and ability that scare you. Nervousness in the pocket. Inability to see and play on time. But I do not know yet if that was him or coaching. Parts of me wondered if you could get it done with this guy, but it's good enough to make you think you have a chance."
Yep.
Here's another one from a defensive coordinator. "He's very talented. Ben is more under center. Caleb is more of a shotgun quarterback. That dynamic's going to be interesting to me. I would not be shocked if the kid plays well. Ben is good. He can adjust. I'm sure they'll find a happy medium somewhere."
Well, that's all right. Yeah, okay. That's good.
So that's good. And, you know, there's a guy thinking that Ben's going to adjust. The Josh Allen comp is a good one. We heard that for Justin as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
And Justin's in tier four.
Justin's in tier four.
Strangely, right behind Russell Wilson again.
That's crazy. But the fact that three different quotes, from one from a GM, one from a head coach, one from a DC, his processing to me is alarming to watch when you watch the tape.
It's really interesting that that has now become a major concern for Caleb. Like, that was not something that coming out people were necessarily concerned, but the 17 games, granted, it was with an idiot coaching staff and an offensive line that I still think was more suspect than graded out. This is now something that people are like, huh, there's the weakness in his game. Processing. Speaks, what if I told you that someone else brought up the same thing before this piece came out? Teron Armstead, who played left tackle for forever, he was at practice last week against the Dolphins. Strangely enough, by the way, he also helped out with the Bears' tackles after practice.
Did he really?
Which I thought was fascinating. It might even be in the inside. It is. Thank you, Baby T. This is what he thinks and what he saw from Caleb Williams.
Caleb Williams, like I'm seeing him, and you can see the number one overall pick talent. You can see where that came from and why he was number one overall pick. And you see it. You see some impressive throws. But Caleb's process, as we talked about quarterback processes, Caleb's process playing that quarterback position has to improve fast and pretty fast, in my opinion. On a consistent basis, Caleb was not able to recognize where he was in danger. He wasn't feeling pressure. He wasn't feeling blitzes. He wasn't seeing blitzes and threats pre-snap. Anthony Weaver, the Dolphins defensive coordinator, was able to send guys from all different spots on the field. And man, a lot of those got home. A lot of those would have been sacks. So as many times as Tua would have been sacked during this practice from what the Bears were doing up front, Caleb Williams would have been sacked even more. Just really not seeing it. And I know Ben Johnson has purposely put a lot on his plate right now for him to try to overload him with information and hopefully that'll speed up his process. But for the Bears to be successful this year and moving forward, his process has to get faster. He has to be able to diagnose his threats, where pressure is coming from, pre-snap reads, kind of understanding coverages. He has some work to do in that spot. And I'm rooting for Caleb. I like the Bears. I like what they have. We got a lot of talent over there, a lot of weapons on offense, DJ Moore, Romeo, Luther Burden. I really like both of those young tackles that they have, Braxton Jones and Darnell Wright. I work with both of those guys after practice for like 20, 30 minutes. Got some really great technique work. I really like both of those guys.
Damn. Teron Armstead played in the NFL for a long, long time.
Went to five Pro Bowls.
Went to five Pro Bowls, knows what a quarterback has to do in terms of processing pre-snap and where pressure's coming from. That's really difficult stuff against smart defensive coordinators who are disguising it on you. So it's interesting. I mean, it's the same word. It's the same processing. That's brain stuff. That's the stuff they can't figure out how to scout until you get to the NFL and have to process the amount of stuff you have to scout. Let me ask you something. From the quotes in the tears piece, when those guys said processing, I thought some of them were talking about going through progressions and reading routes and deciding when to throw it during the active play. And Armstead is talking about pre-snap processing. So you need both.
Pre-snap to post-snap. I think that all of that is inside of the same bucket of processing. And I actually really like what Armstead said, because I think it actually gives us a cleaner definition of it. I think that we often go, this guy can't move from read one to read two. This is more of, does he understand what he's seeing as he walks to the line of scrimmage? And if he doesn't, that is problematic. To go along with all of the operational stuff, to go up there and see, and this is a part two where if you add in the difference, this is right here, speaks the difference between a quarterback under center and a quarterback in shotgun. Because the quarterback in shotgun can kind of keep looking. He can kind of keep looking, even as the ball is snapped sometimes, to see what's going on. If he has trust in his center on where everyone is and where everyone rolled to as the play was getting called out. This, to me, is a little scary, but not. I understand why it's happening. Like, this is the difference. This is the difference in you used to do this. Now you're doing this.
It's scary because it's the same stuff from a lot of different sources. Sean Payton's quotes in the Wickersham book that John Greenberg referenced yesterday were twofold. One was about dealing with failure, and I think Caleb actually did a pretty damn good job of that last year.
But that was team failure. He can realistically look at last season and go,
I did all right.
I did all right.
Yeah. And so that was one of Peyton's things. The other one was processing. He used the same word. So now it's either a groupthink criticism or at least confirmation on where he is right now. So I don't, it's scary because it's so much of the same, but
there's a lot of, I mean, we know that, you know, Mike Sando, like, he doesn't, like, there's a lot of respected names, like, inside of that he can't name.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly.
No, clearly.
And then you add in someone like Sean Payton, and I'm pretty sure Teron's career
was with Sean Payton for a while, right?
He played for Dan Rochard for 6 years in New Orleans, so that's probably why he was working with the Bears tackles.
Yeah. Oh, he played for Dan Rochard.
So, okay. so this is a guy who probably sees offense the way that Sean Payton sees offense.
Well, yeah, that's right, because he was with the Saints from 13 to 21.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so maybe they've talked about some stuff.
I don't know if they've talked specifically about Caleb. I just think that if you've played in a system,
yeah, terminology commonalities.
You know what to expect. If you've been a tackle,
good point. Very good
and
point.
You know what a quarterback, when the ball's supposed to be out, kind of looking at the formation. Like, think of it from his standpoint of him being like, oh, I know what this defense is because I've been an offensive lineman for 12 years in the league.
So can you teach that?
Yes, you can. I don't like the absolute statements about a guy either has it or they don't.
I agree. I agree in terms of humanity. And I do agree in terms of athletes that you can learn, you can get better. It might take longer. It might take longer. Sometimes some quarterbacks go the Geno Smith route.
Correct.
Or the Baker Mayfield route.
Correct. Where those are great examples.
It takes several years for them to see it right way.
And it takes you getting away from incompetency. And so that's where, to go back to the really positive quote inside the piece,
yeah,
that's where if you need solace, you can look for it in that.
You look, and Josh Allen did it in a fast time.
Right.
Within the first rookie contract.
You get the right coach with the right quarterback, and some of that stuff can figure itself out. I do think that there's a bigger conversation here, and I know Bears fans might not even want to have the bigger conversation. I think that now that everyone, and I mean us, I mean a Bears fan, everyone's a GM, and everyone knows about the quarterback clock, and everyone knows about how much money quarterbacks eat up inside of a salary cap, that there is a rush to make quarterbacks a finished product before the end of year two. And I think quarterbacking is hard, and I think that it is not linear, and some of this stuff does end up having to be, oh, well, would you look at Baker Mayfield now? Another one of one.
Right.
Another one of the Oklahoma quarterbacks, right?
Yeah. Takes him a little while.
And then he threw for 5,000 yards last year.
But
there's a lot to sit with there, Speaks.
There really is. I'm going to hold on to those quotes. And I think an understanding of what processing is, you and I can delve into that a little bit more and how it works. We both watched the quarterback show on Netflix.
And I wish Caleb would.
But, you know, Ben didn't want him to.
You don't know that. I wish Caleb would watch that show. He got it.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Ryan, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Doing great. How are you?
Oh, we're fired up. I mean, this is what it's all about, getting the chance to talk to you, getting ready for the Bears season, and finally getting to look at your team. There's going to be a big practice tomorrow, obviously, and then Sunday night, national television, will be the unveiling of the first team offense for the first time under Ben Johnson, of the first team defense as well. Everybody's going to play. I think everyone in Chicago is fired up to see it.
Yeah, it's going to be a great, great opportunity. Like you said, that joint practice is going to be the first step and get a team in here that's been, you know, knocking on that Super Bowl door, championship caliber team that's well coached and well prepared. So I think it's going to be a really good test for our team and where we're at. And then, of course, get a look at these guys on game day. So it should be good.
Ryan, great to chat with you. Obviously, I think we have to start with Caleb Williams, and I think everyone's really excited to see him play on Sunday in particular. Where have you seen him improve the most throughout training camp, and how do you hope to see that show up on Sunday night?
Yeah, you can see, you know, for a young quarterback, you can see his progress that he's made throughout training camp and really over the last 2 years, night and day, just in terms of the operation. And there's still room to improve. But he's taking ownership of that, being open to being coached hard, and he continues to get better. You know, with young players, it's usually, you know, 2-3 steps forward, maybe a step back, 2-3 steps forward, step back. Kind of that natural progression as we've gone through camp. But I love to see him continue to improve, you know, with the operation. And he'll have the opportunity to do that here in this first preseason game that he's going to play in.
I'm curious about that, about the play of the starters. And we heard from Ben Johnson yesterday, and he said that that it will be determined how much they play. There were a lot of things involved in that. I'm just curious, you know, coming from Kansas City, where Andy Reid played his starters, they played a lot in the preseason. What is your philosophy versus Ben's philosophy? Do you guys agree on this? How much conversation did it take to help you guys decide when the starters will play? And I could be wrong, but I'm guessing that third preseason game coming on Friday after a Sunday night game, it seems like this may be the debut and the finale.
Dress rehearsal,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Ben and I, we have a lot of discussions about this to start. The one thing I really appreciate about Ben is he's very, very thoughtful. And it's really a part of being a head coach that no one really thinks about when you're putting together the schedule, the workloads, working with sports science, and also your installation process as well. He's been very thoughtful with that and has had a great plan that I absolutely agree with. Obviously wanted to get a high volume of reps for that group last week against Miami as well, plus the pregame, and now be able to roll out and get these guys going in a live situation in the stadium where, you know, you got to get the calls through the headsets, and it's a normal game operation. So, you know, we did have a lot of conversations, and I like the progression. I would not assume that this would be the last one either.
Okay.
I think he's going to take a look and see how practice goes, how the game goes, and kind of determine how we're going to approach the third game. But I think we're still pretty open to how we're going to approach the Kansas City operation as well, because kind of the big challenge over the last few years is when you have that empty space where it used to be a fourth preseason game, I think you have to really look at that differently, because that's a long time between games, in between live action. So
yep.
We'll continue to work through that, but I wouldn't make any assumptions on the last game either.
You brought up working with Ben, and obviously you interviewed him and had a big part in getting him here. And I'm just curious, because Mully and I were just joking about it before you came on, you know, you never got to sit in a meeting room with him. You never watched him coach on the field. Like, what has surprised you the most about Ben Johnson, the head coach?
Yeah, like, so one, I knew the intelligence was very high. I knew from, you know, obviously playing them when he was calling it, that from a scheme situation, like a scheme standpoint, he was very good. Gave me vibes of what we had in Kansas City, mm-hmm. and how he was able to get players in positions to be successful, but also to attack pressure points on the opposing defense. So I knew that part was there. Had very little questions about that. I think anytime you're hiring someone, it's like, how are they in front of the room? How are they in stressful situations? What's the overall day-to-day operation look like in terms of motivating the guys and then staff? And he's knocked all of those out of the park in front of the room. He's incredible, very thoughtful on how he approaches the team, and the guys respond to it. The intensity has been high. I knew he was an intense guy, but it's sky high, and it's because he cares. The passion level is off the charts, and the guys respond to that really well, which has been really cool to see. And they trust him. We had that padded practice. Everyone was talking about how physical it was, and I told them after, I said, you know what, this tells me that this team trusts you, because not a lot of teams are doing that anymore. practices aren't that physical, but they believe in you. When you said, hey, we need to do this in order to take the next step to be a physical football team that's going to allow us to win and also be resilient when we get into the season. And they didn't think twice about it. They did it. And that was a huge sign for me.
Ryan, I'm sure you're familiar with this Seth Wickersham book that's coming out, American Kings, about quarterbacks. And Caleb has already addressed some of the stuff with his father and the pre-draft process and whether they were ready to come to Chicago or worried about coming to Chicago, etc. I'm sure you're well familiar with it. There was an element of it that I didn't hear about until recently, which is apparently there's a chapter where Sean Payton talks about the way that he evaluates quarterbacks, and he's looking specifically at Caleb, and he talked about the number of I think he calls them too many completions left on the field. The idea that sometimes with college guys you got to look at the negative plays versus the positive plays. But he said at the time that he was a little bit concerned, a little worried about Caleb's processing speed. Is that a legitimate concern? And just generally speaking, when it comes to processing speed, I mean, for years, I was always taught by people in the NFL that accuracy with quarterbacks is something you really can't learn. You're either accurate or you're not. You can either throw the ball. You can't really get better at it, even if you can improve slightly. But processing speed seems to be something that you can improve on, that you can work at. Is that something you're counting on with the relationship between Ben and Caleb?
Yeah, and that's the time that you put into it as well. I mean, you got to get to the point. And I had all my scouts, and we actually spent time on, not so much processing speed, but instincts, read and react. And we really focused on that for every single position. And we feel like the more reps that you get at it and the more big picture understanding of what you're trying to accomplish within the scheme allows you then to start speeding that up. And the more reps that you get, the more opportunities that you get, you should see that improve. Obviously, you got to put the time in and have that relationship to get the clear understanding. So, yeah, we believe that that's definitely part of the evaluation, something that can continue to improve over time. So that'll be interesting. And I tell you what, like, you look across the league, and I know there's historically, you're probably right, but you know, when you see a guy like Josh Allen and his completion percentage and accuracy improve like it did, you know, it gives you hope in development of really everyone on your roster. I mean, I'm looking at Nashawn Wright, I'm looking at Theo, offensive line, we're looking at Dom and Booker. Like, it's been really cool to see this staff lean into these guys and see this growth in a very short period of time. So as long as the work ethic's there, the dedication's there, the passion for the game, and then there's a relationship with the coach where they trust them, I think you can grow in all these different areas.
I'm glad you brought up Theo Benedict, because we got to see him get some reps with the ones yesterday at left tackle. Is he really in the mix in that competition, or was it just sort of an opportunity to, you know, get Ozzie on the right side? How do you view that left tackle competition at this moment?
Yeah, it's still ongoing. And as a staff, I think, you know, Dan Rochard spoke recently, but, you know, we're looking for someone to take that position and go out there and play free and get after it. And Theo's earned that. He has excelled since this year. Just seen the growth physically and performance wise. So he's earned really the right to get into that competition. So we're excited to see him get more and more reps at the left spot. And he's shown that he can play a little bit of right, and he's shown he can play guard, which just brings tremendous value. And then Ozzie, we got to also look forward to, you know, the season two. So, you know, wherever this lands, you know, you got to show some versatility to be active on game day and to help us. And I haven't done the study. I'm sure not historically, but over the last few years, we had to be at the very top of the league in terms of the amount of different O-line combinations. I hope that slows down, but we got that we have everyone ready to go, and they can play both sides in different positions. So really excited to see that play out here. You would hope that it starts to clear itself up here, I would say, over the next week or two.
I'm curious, Ryan, do you feel when you're evaluating offensive linemen that you have an advantage as a former offensive lineman, or does it become more difficult because you know more about that position than anyone, than any other? I mean, is that a burden for you? Is that a plus for you?
No, I would say there's a couple things there. I do think when you play the position, you understand the little details. You can probably pick up on certain things. That's why I love talking to different scouts that play different positions, because they can just pick up on the small things. If it's just the stripe of the helmet, where eyes are going through, you know, a twist, or even a linebacker being able to read and react and trigger. So it's really cool to hear from different people in those positions. I think sometimes the hard thing is we have a super high standard, and you're always looking, you know, for the absolute best. And there's also in between where guys can come in and develop and get better as well. And that takes, you know, some tools and traits, especially coming out of college and even the smaller school. You understand that there's growth and they can get to that point. I would say it's probably more of a positive. And I got a couple guys on staff, you know, some tight ends, some O linemen that I feel like we're dialed in pretty good. And it's starting to show up, and I love the way this is set up. Darnell continues to improve, working on his consistency and finish. And then the three guys inside with Jonah and Drew and Joe, it's been a pleasure to watch those three work together, start to gel and communicate. And I think we're going to see that early in our run game. That should get established pretty good this year.
Speaking of the run game, I know everyone, including DeAndre Swift himself, is looking for a better year this year. I wanted to ask you specifically, though, about Kyle Manungai and how fun it's been for you to sort of watch him develop over the course of training camp. A seventh-round draft pick who Ben Johnson said after Family Fest, he's someone that we're going to be able to trust. It's high praise for a seventh-round guy.
Yeah. Yeah, you pair those guys up with Eric Bieniemy, usually good things happen.
Yeah.
Kyle's been doing a really good job. You know, when you watch the tape, you really appreciate the vision, the feel at that position, and then the contact balance and the strength. A lot of times you've seen guys excel and reach their ceiling because of those traits, and that's what he has. Sometimes I think at that position you can over-evaluate, you know, the 40 time. Kyle's a guy that is going to find the right crease. He's going to fall forward. We saw that in that first preseason game. So I'm really excited about him. He surprised me. Even his hands are a lot better than I thought they were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Also going to help us in certain situations and check downs. And he's a pain. He's a guy that, you know, wear on you throughout the course of the game. And with that rotation, with him and Swift, and we'll see with, you know, Roche and Homer, how they, you know, how that pans out. But should be a pretty cool combination.
Ryan, we really appreciate time. We'll let you go just on the way out. I'm very curious. In previous seasons, we saw you guys, you know, maybe making an extra cut and picking someone up, maybe trying to improve your team through other teams letting guys go at the end of camp. Is that still the case? Do you think that you'll be shopping around and looking? It's always important to improve your team whenever you can. Is that an opportunity that could happen before the start of the season, or do you feel pretty set with this roster?
Yeah. One, I've learned fast. I never feel set with the roster. Things change so fast, injuries or whatever. So we attack it like we did the first year. Our pro staff, including myself, will make calls across the league and just kind of see what's out there, what's available, what the chatter is, and see if that's something that can improve our football team. In terms of the claim process, once you start moving out of the first three slots there in the claim order, it becomes a little bit more difficult, got to be a little bit more selective. thankfully the roster's in a much better place than it was the first year when we made all those claims, so it's harder to make this football team.
Right.
We're going to be in a situation now where I think there's probably 57, 58 guys that I really would like, which makes it really hard in terms of making decisions down the stretch. But it's also a positive in terms of how far we've come. So it'll be a little bit harder. The number goes down, you know, as you get your roster set, but we'll always take swings at players that we think can improve our roster. I think you always got to stay aggressive and keep that mindset regardless of where your football team is. So we'll continue to do that.
Great stuff, Ryan. Thank you a ton. Really
appreciate you, Ryan.
To talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. That is the general manager of the Chicago Bears. That's Ryan Poles. Interesting stuff from him.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
All right, so there's this video. And I think
it's
some
hilarious.
Yeah, some yeah. National places, I think.
They blew it up.
So when people say it's some indication of what's happening to you at camp, what do you, I mean, what do you say about that?
I just laugh at it. It's, I look at them and I laugh at them, as always.
That's Caleb Williams talking about the viral video, the net drill, which isn't a game. It's not a practice. It's just a drill. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. Happy to be joined by Fox NFL reporter Carmen Vitale in studio. We're happy to see you.
I'm happy to be here.
Weren't you there for the net drill?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like nobody even, like, whatever. I did not make anything of it.
No. And, like, Caleb being annoyed with it, like, yeah, all right, because he didn't hit where he wanted to. But that's a very common drill. Every team that I've ever been around has done it. That or the trash can game.
Right.
Where they put a trash can like in the corner of the end zone and you have to fade it in there, whichever quarterback can, you know, get it in there the most gets whatever. They place like little minuscule bets or whatever.
Or more than minuscule, depending on the quarterback.
I know. I wasn't trying to get anybody in trouble.
Okay, my bad.
But no, I mean, and so I don't know. Who knows? Maybe during that drill they had like a friendly bet. Who knows?
Well, and I think that's the point. I likened it to, am I concerned if a guy is missing threes in pregame warm-ups before the game? No. Mm-hmm. I'm only concerned when they look hurt.
And that's a drill where they don't even, like, grab the laces or anything. They're just literally, it's rapid fire.
Right.
It's as it comes. And that's why I was like, why are...
It's like Papa Shot. It's
as it kind of got shot. More and more attention on social media, it's like, are we really doing this right now?
I think a lot of it had to do with his reaction to it. But, like... I don't know. Like, it's hot outside. You don't want to be there. Like, it's just, it's tough stuff. Like, I don't know. I just thought that was him being annoyed, and he's allowed to be annoyed.
That is the truth. He is allowed to be annoyed, especially when he's had the season he had last year. He's absolutely allowed to be frustrated. And we are too. You know, that's the other part of this. It's, I try to not do this. I try to not, people are going to be mad at us no matter what.
Yeah, that's fair.
They're not listening half the time, and they make it up anyway. A lot of the people who are always going to be mad. So I don't put a ton of stock into it, but it is part of our job also to know what fans are talking about, to know, you know, what people have questions about. That is very much a piece of this. And you know that being a reporter, Marshall, too. So Mark Grody, when Caleb Williams was on with us last Friday, asked him, because Mark is on the Bears beat, as you know, about whether or not the coverage of him and the discussion surrounding him had been fair.
Fair isn't my job to judge, you know. But I mean, I wouldn't say that there's always truth to the reports that come out. Typically, to be honest with you, that come out. We're in practice. We're in training camp. We didn't maybe score as many points or anything like that last year or win as many games, but. Some of these reports that come out, yes, they are a little false, especially after a year that I had last year. You know, it's all right. It's everybody's job, and everybody has a job to do. And my job is to go win games. Your job may to be, you know, report and critic, good, bad, or indifferent. And, you know, there's no judge for either side.
I love that answer. Honestly, I think it was straight to the point. Like, it's not his job to be out here worried about who's being critical of him. His job is to go win football games.
Mm-hmm. I think the issue is when, if it's your family having an author of a book in your space and you say that's not true, that's a separate discussion.
I didn't take him saying that as the book wasn't true. I took it as some reports about him over the course of his career are not true.
Yeah, like over the course of the season. That's how I took it as well. And I just, he's not a stranger to this limelight. Like, he played in the second largest market in the country in college during the NIL era, where players are treated like professionals in college more than they ever have before. And he got really used to the bright lights of LA. So coming to Chicago, I mean, there's probably more eyeballs on him here. I know there's more eyeballs on him
here. Because LA is LA.
That's not a great sports town. Sorry, guys.
They didn't have an NFL team for many years.
Yeah.
Well, now they have two.
Is there a professional football team in LA?
I always say it was USC, yeah.
Well, now they have two, and they still don't remember that they have a professional football team. Anyway,
but I lived there for two and a half years, guys.
I can say this. I just think that he is very well media trained. And he is. Like, we talked to him after some of those really tough losses last year, and he handled himself beautifully. And he's never said anything into a microphone that has been really controversial or whatever. He's very methodical with the way that he speaks to the media, and that comes from years of practice, because this isn't new to him. And I do think that he really does understand, you know, this is other people's jobs. The media are full of people that are just doing their jobs. Are you going to get it wrong sometimes? Yeah. Is he going to throw a bad pass sometimes? Yeah. Like, it's the same thing. It's everybody isn't going to have 100% hit rate in their job. And him being understanding and having that answer, I think, was great.
I do, too. And I think the other piece of this is I was going to finish my thought by just saying, you know, it's one thing if it's a book and that's invited into your home.
For sure.
And that was an agreed upon partnership. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted to say that, you know, I think it's unfair if it's like a net drill and we know you threw for 3,500 yards in unideal circumstances last year. You know, that's when I think it's not fair. Have I seen any indication that he can't make the same throws that Tyson Bagent did but better yesterday? Of course. I think his passes wouldn't have been deflected as much as they were in yesterday's game. I think he can force the same ball into double coverage. I've seen him throw hell of a fade to players in the end zone, just like Case Keenum did.
Yeah.
So I wasn't concerned about a drill like that necessarily.
No, and like Marshall brought up too, that's really not even the point of those drills. It's rapid fire. Like, can you, and like, if so, because it's rapid fire, if you have like a 25% hit rate, which I know he didn't in that one, but if you have a 25% hit rate, like, that's good. That's considered good. You know what I mean? Because you're in less than ideal circumstances. It is rapid fire. You aren't getting a good grip on the laces. You aren't being snapped it from your center in the correct way and all that kind of stuff. So I do think that there is, I'm with you, Layla. I think there's an overreaction to every little thing because there are more voices than ever. And everybody is, you know, clicks are a huge part of our industry. And that's what we are measured on so often of the time. And it's how do you get those clicks, I think, that separates certain people from others. But I understand why it happens. And it isn't fair for a lot of these athletes to be put under a microscope for something that doesn't warrant it. Which is why, like, I really appreciate the perspective myself from being with a team. Because it's like, I've seen those drills everywhere I've been. I know, like, just using that as an example, like, there's plenty of other examples of, like, well, I know that this wasn't his doing, and or this wasn't, you know, this was because of this, because that's how this works in the front office. Or, you know, he didn't talk then because it wasn't that he didn't want to talk. It was that somebody else didn't want him to talk within the building. Like, there are calculations and stuff that just, I'm rambling now, but it was, I just think that, like,
it was overblown.
It was overblown, and those things happen because of the oversaturation, and those are the things that are unfair. But I don't think, in general, I think the Chicago beat really does. There's so many people on this beat. I need people to understand that. Like, I've been in giant markets. I've been in LA. I've been in smaller markets too, Tampa, Phoenix. The Chicago beat is huge, and there are so many people on it. And I think that on the whole, they do a really, really good job of trying to, you know, talk about all perspectives and see everything from every side.
No, I agree. I do think that, yeah, you're right. There are certain, if you read the actual story and actually read it, That's a big ask for a lot of people now.
No, they just want to read social media and see little two, three sentences or one-liners. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
I think when it comes to Caleb Williams, there's an agreement there. Fans do need him to be good. Like you can sense the desperation in the fan base, and I think that
rightfully
is
so.
Lawrence has mentioned this. We've talked about the record under Ben Johnson to start for the Lions. Do they have a 1-6 start in them? I'm still trying to figure that part out of it too.
I wouldn't be surprised because of how tough this schedule is. I mean, that's why I keep kind of preaching the whole patience aspect of all of this because I think the important thing is I don't think that's indicative of what the Ben Johnson tenure is going to be like.
No.
But I want us to have patience with this team because they did go through an overhaul both offensively and defensively. Simultaneously to that, they have a really tough start to the season. They have a tough season in general as far as schedule goes. And that is not going to, I just can't imagine it's going to look pretty. Now, I am glad to be wrong. If they go out there, all cylinders are firing. Caleb looks like he has command of the offense immediately. You know, that offensive line really pays off and they're gelling and they're already together. And, you know, the skill players are running the crispest routes you've ever seen and all that kind of stuff. Then I'm happy to be wrong. But all of that has to go right. And that's so hard. Like, you have to have 11 guys on the same page. And like I get too existential about it. But sometimes I think, like, how does any play go right in football when you take into consideration all of the minute things that have to go right in order for a play to be successful? And it's wild to me because every receiver's route, the timing has to be right. The steps have to be right. He has to be in the correct position on the field. The quarterback has to have his eyes trained on, you know, his reads. He has to get through his reads at the right time. The offensive line has to have the internal clock of the quarterback and the play and knowing exactly how much time that they have to protect in order to get that ball out when it needs to go out. And like the running back has to pass protect. The tight ends have to figure out if they're attaching or if they're releasing or what. Like, all of this stuff is wild to me. That's why I love football so much. I'm getting like giddy because it's such an insane, chaotic sport it's like an orderly chaos. And I want people to understand how difficult it is to have everything go right. And so that when you do have these offensive overhauls, the scheme comes in, new coaches come in, you have this really complex scheme that you're trying to install with a young quarterback, it's probably not going to go right in the beginning, but that's not indicative of where it's going to go.
4 weeks from tonight, you can stop your giddiness and just explode because it's going to be Vikings.
I know.
4 weeks.
What a first test.
Monday Night Football, that's crazy.
All of that. Like, after how long we had to wait for an actual division game last year?
Yes. Yeah. That is the part, right? It's like, oh, we're not doing that again. We got something.
Division guys back to back.
Yes, very different. Is there a chance Jordan Jefferson's not ready for week
Justin?
One?
Justin, yeah.
Justin Jefferson, yes.
I would be surprised if he's not. I think that, like, they are very, very conservative with him in the preseason because, like, why? You know what Justin Jefferson can do. And basically, you know that JJ is counting on him to be down there somewhere because every quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings has been able to just say internally, F it, JJ's down there somewhere, and he usually comes down with it. So I think that they are just being, you know, he's had hamstring issues in the past. He's had soft tissue issues in the past. So it's just being super conservative. I don't see a reason why he wouldn't be out there week one. But, you know, stranger things have happened. I don't know if he suffers a setback or something like that. I just think they're being very conservative with him right now.
I just hope I can draft him in fantasy. That's what I would like to
do. I mean, you can draft him.
Well, he probably is going to go number one or number two. It's rough.
Carmen, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Anything really quickly, I know we're up against the week, but anything we just need to be looking for that's on your mind this week?
Oh, gosh. No, I mean, I'm very interested to see then, you know, how they handle Caleb Williams in the second preseason game and how much he plays and if he's going to play the second and the third or just the third or just the second. It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I just wanted to make sure. I don't know if there's some NFL team that's doing something right now that you might say, look for this.
No, the Packers are Matthew Golden might be the truth.
And that's a hell of a draft pick, even for being a first rounder.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the first time they've done it since 2005, 1995.
Yeah, it's not. Well, 2005 was Aaron Rodgers. So
it was way before that. Yeah. It must have been 1995. It's been a long time.
That is Carmen Vitale. You can catch her work on Fox and also, of course, well, foxsports.com, and also, of course, on Marquee Sports Network. And we want to do a giveaway, guys. Caller 6, let's do it. Score contest line, 312-540-0670, 312-540-0670. We'll win a pair of general admission tickets to see Blink-182, Weird Al, Alkaline Trio, Rilo Kiley, The Pogues, and more at Riot Fest on Friday, September 19th. We have more coming up on Raheemy and Harris. You're listening on the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.